Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Junkies. We're presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junks. A bit later in the show, we'll be joined by Captain Mike Cofield. That's coming up at 8:20, aviation expert. Right now, we head to the Rude Guest Hotline. Say good morning to a guy we've had on the show many times before over the years, Jeff Wise, aviation journalist, host of the Finding MH370 podcast. Jeff, thanks for joining us on such short notice. We do appreciate the time.
Hey, always happy to jump in.
So how much do you know about the particulars of this incident? It just happened at about 9 p.m. last night. And a bigger picture question, how common are close calls in regards to mid-air collisions like the one we saw here in D.C. last night at 9 p.m.?
Well, to your first question, there's a lot that we don't know. It emerged, as you say, in the evening last night that this regional jet had collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter while coming into land at Reagan National Airport just outside D.C. Apparently went into the river. What I'm seeing is that no survivors have been found as yet. There were 64 people on board that jet, 3 on board the helicopter. It's frankly not looking very good. And as to your second point, yeah, there's been a spate of incidents recently. The Times had a really good report back in 2023 about near misses that were taking place at airports in the context of staffing problems at air traffic control towers. You know, this is one of these incidents where there's warning signs, and then finally something bad happens.
It's just horrific. Some of us have buddies that are pilots, and I texted one of my, commercial pilot and for major airliner, and he said, I asked him about all the military flights around here, and he said, yeah, it's not really that common in other major airports. You have this many military aircraft flying around, too, to kind of complicate everything. Is there any way we can avoid this in the future? Can we limit some of that?
Definitely. I mean, there are ways we can make aviation safer. It has been incredibly safe. An oft-repeated statistic in the last few hours has been that there hasn't been a fatal crash involving a U.S. carrier since 2009. But, safety is a matter of taking care, paying attention to detail, not cutting corners, It's not glamorous. It's not exciting. It's actually fundamentally very, very boring to just go through your checklists, you know, meet your requirements time after time after time. But when thing, you know, it's always easy to like, well, maybe we'll just cut this one corner. Maybe we'll just, you know, eliminate this one safeguard. And then, you know, everything is fine until suddenly it's not.
Jeff, I was taken aback by a quote I saw from Mary Schiavo, who used to work for the U.S. Transportation Department, former inspector general, where she said DCA is just a very busy airport that opened decades ago. It was supposed to close because it was too close to the city. Like, is it just too close to a big population center and all the congestion here in a small-ish city where it's just outdated? Like, it shouldn't even be there at this point? What's your take on that?
Well, it's definitely an operational challenge. It's close to the most protected airspace in the world, probably. Mm-hmm. And you've got military aviation, as you say. A lot of people want to use it, and a lot of very powerful people want to use it. Mm-hmm. And so how do you push back against people who say, you know, because, yeah, there's recently been pressure that there were more flights added, and people said, is it really safe to add these more flights? Well, maybe your congressman needs to get back for their Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm sure you've seen just the reports that are online. Everyone's kind of gobbling up whatever information they can find. I don't know if it's accurate, but you see these flight paths that they say that the helicopter was going on. Some people were saying it was somewhat erratic. Did you notice anything unusual with the helicopter flight path?
Well, there's only partial information available because there's sort of data that every civilian aircraft is broadcasting mm-hmm. as they're moving through this airspace, and military aircraft don't have to do that. So it was mm-hmm. broadcasting a different kind of location information, and it's less complete right now. So I think there's a lot that we don't know mm-hmm. right now. Obviously, something went wrong. Like it seems like the Black Hawk was not where it was supposed to be at that moment. But even that is too preliminary to say. But, yeah, we just don't know. There's just so many unfilled boxes here.
What about the idea, you know, that the commercial airliner was, like, flying with that instrument, you know, whatever the rules are, and the other one, I guess, it was visual rules, and how normal and abnormal is that, especially at night? Can you give us some detail on that?
So, yeah, there's two ways that you can fly a plane: instrument flight rules mm-hmm. and visual flight rules. And the when the weather is really bad, you have to use instrument flight rules. But you can also use instrument flight rules when the weather is good, and you can see the weather seems to have been clear at the moment. The Black Hawk maybe was flying by visual flight rules, even though it's flying visually, meaning it's mm-hmm. the pilot is looking at the world around him to mm-hmm. orient. You're still under the direct control of the air traffic controllers. The air traffic controllers should have known where everybody was yeah. and should have told people, follow my instructions so you don't run into other people. Now, sometimes they don't, maybe somebody doesn't follow those instructions, in which case the air traffic controller might have to tell the other plane, hey, get out of the way, this guy's gone rogue. Listen, at this point, something really bad happened, and we don't know why. We don't know why these two planes are in the same place at the same time right now.
Mm-hmm. It's also, Jeff, it's also confusing to me. We kind of talked about this earlier, and I understand there's a lot of military bases around here, and it's heavy military. I get it. But why a military helicopter would be flying so close to the airport, especially at night?
Yeah, that's a great question. My understanding is that there's a lot of helicopter traffic up and down the Potomac. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a busy airspace. There's lots of VIPs who have to go from point A to point B. I mean, this was a helicopter whose purpose is to carry VIPs around. And when I first saw that, I was like, okay, who is the VIP on board? And you can just imagine mm-hmm. the consequences if this was some, you know, mm-hmm. heavy hitter. There was no such person aboard. But, yeah, this is we're talking about the challenges of operating in this kind of airspace so close to the city. If you're going to do that, if you're going to try to operate in this ambitious environment, you better have your ducks in a row. And obviously they were not.
Yeah, you got to be on your game.
Did you notice anything unusual when you listened to the air traffic controls and their communications with the aircraft?
I did not, no. Yeah. But again, we're sort of operating in the fog right now.
Mm-hmm. What, by the way, just as a side note, I know you're big on the Malaysian thing. What's sort of your latest theory on that? I mean, have you solved that riddle yet?
I feel like we're closing in on it. You know, it's obvious now that we live in a very different environment from what we thought we were living in 2014. There have been a whole host of incidents where bad actors are getting involved in tampering with GPS data. We recently had the Russian GRU, military intelligence, was putting incendiary devices in cargo shipments, which could have easily brought down a plane. There's an amazing story in the Times recently about how the State Department actually had to make direct contact with the Russians to say, hey, stop doing this, or you're going to cause, you might trigger a war. Mm-hmm. So we know that this is a much more adversarial environment than we realized back in 2014. I think it's just a question of putting the pieces together.
Mm. So would you care to say what your current theory is on that one?
Yeah, I think there's a good possibility that it was a cyber hack, and I think we need to take. I think we need to start really taking seriously that we need to become more aware of the vulnerability of civil aviation to some characteristics. There was a crash in Vilnius, Lithuania, late last year mm-hmm. that did have the marks of a potential cyber attack. Mm-hmm. We just don't know at this point. This one, I think, is probably an indication of a different problem, which is just kind of overloading and underfinancing the air traffic control system.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, are you still surprised at the media interest about Malaysia Airlines Flight 370? I mean, it disappeared March of 2014, so it's been almost 11 years now.
I
think there should be more interest, frankly. I mean, I know people are obsessed, but they should be obsessed, because it's absolutely crazy and bonkers that a plane with so many people just simply vanished into thin air, and there are the officials have no answer. They literally have no idea what happened to this plane. They can't. You asked me what the latest is. Malaysia has said that they have authorized this private company, Ocean Infinity, to start a third seabed search to try to find the wreckage. I don't think that they will be successful, but I'm glad that they're going to try. I think we need to really recognize that, like, if they don't find this plane on the seabed, we need to stop and say, okay, what are we failing to understand here? Because I think they're operating under false assumptions.
Joined by Jeff Wise, aviation journalist, host of the Finding MH370 podcast. You can download that on the Odyssey app. I'm sure you saw the story about the Gonzaga Hoops team whose plane was on the runway and almost collided with another plane at LAX as they were in LA to play a couple teams. I think it was a couple months ago or maybe last month.
Yeah.
How concerning is that? You know, the air traffic controllers are either understaffed, overworked, whatever it might be, where now you're starting to see these incursions on the wrong runways at airports and near misses. How concerning is that to you, and how concerned should we be about it?
Well, obviously, we should have been more concerned. It was these were indications of trouble, and when you have things almost happening, it's only a matter of time before they really do happen. And you know, it's similar to the issue you were talking about earlier with, like, here's an airport, it's too close to the city, it's too small, but people want to use it. People, you know, want to cut corners. And eventually you pay the price. We have to take these things seriously. And, you know, it's not enough to just make big promises and say that everything is going to get better because I'm going to wave my magic wand. This is nothing happens by magic. Things happen by boring, plodding, following the rules, keeping your nose to the grindstone, and you get what you pay for, and you can cut corners and cut corners. This is very similar, in my opinion, to what happened with Boeing, where they made an incredibly safe aircraft that, as a result of being so safe, was very successful and popular with the public. They got a dominant market share, and they started to realize, well, you know what, we can cut a couple corners, and we can make more money for our shareholders. And yeah, you can do that for so long. And then one day, you know, it stops working, and then you've got a tragedy on your hands. And it's a lot harder to build up a good reputation than it is to salvage a good reputation. You know, once you screw up, it's really hard to get people to trust you again. And again, this is what's going to happen here, I think.
Mm. Jeff, last question from me. So we all live in this area, right, in the DMV, the District, Maryland, Virginia. And I don't know. My one takeaway after all of this over the last 24 hours is I don't think I'm going to fly out of Reagan unless it's an absolute necessity. I'm just going to fly out of Dulles. I mean, why bother, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that people are going to be on their very best behavior going forward.
For
I think
sure.
There's going to be changes. And
okay.
And I'm hoping that, listen, it's still, this is something that people like me always say over and over again after crashes. It's still an incredibly safe way to get from A to B.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeff,
overall.
We really, really appreciate the time. Sorry, it only happens basically when there's an aviation disaster, but we appreciate the insight and the expertise, man.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Always happy to come on. Thanks.
Yep,
for having
thank
me.
You.
I'm
going
to be sure
it.
To go download that Finding MH370 podcast on the Odyssey app.
I mean,
Drab and I have been talking about the case for years. It's fascinating.
So they've never found one piece of wreckage in that disaster.
I think they sometimes think they do, but I don't know. If
I think they
confirmed.
Found wreckage. They just weren't sure if it was part of that. I think.
They think they find stuff floating in the ocean, but I don't know if they ever confirm it. I mean, Jeff would know, but
yep. So you can go to the Odyssey.
It literally
app.
Disappeared off the radar.
It's the
That's
finding
like the thing of movies.
The Finding MH370 podcast. We appreciate that insight from him. Coming up in about an hour, Captain Mike Cofield. He'll join us at 8:20. Another aviation expert to try to give us some more insight into the disaster that unfolded at around 9 p.m. last night here in Washington D.C. We'll be right back.